B-Pod Studios.
Belger.
I'm a liar and a phony. One of those no good nicks you keep running away from.
Maz.
I'm a man, Bell. Nobody's perfect.
Belger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, hi, everybody. Welcome to the program. Felger Maserati coming to you on a Thursday from the TD Garden. Bruins play tonight, but we're going to be mostly Patriots, as you might expect. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, how are you?
Murray.
Hello.
Hello. We're just going to get right into it. We have Patriots tickets to give away today. We have a Bruins package to give away today. Ted Johnson is going to join us in an hour in studio. So, full show. Again, Patriots tickets. Two chances to win. They're coming up at, let me give the times. 3:30 and 5:30 for Patriots tickets, all right? So I'll give you more details as we go forward, but that's the deal today. I want to lead off today's show following up on something we did yesterday. And it's our whole debate, and it ties into a lot of stuff we always debate about the role of the running back in the running game and specifically the Patriots' approach in this ball game. San Diego, again, plays these fronts, plays this defense with a lot of defensive backs on the field. They take out linebackers, big guys, for guys who can cover in the passing game or run well, and they're smaller guys. So what that basically does is invite you to run the football. And you know how I feel about running backs or putting too much money or draft capital into running backs. I think they're disposable razors and the most overrated position in the world of professional sports. There is no more overrated position than the running back. Honestly, give me a good, right back in soccer over a running back. I just think, God, they're just running backs are for children. Okay, or people who don't get the game, or college football fans. Talking about you, Murray. So it ties into all of this.
Yeah, I would make the J.O. Sign with my hand, but I won't.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, yes, you do.
Yeah, you do.
The what sign?
The J.O. sign with his hand.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, hell yes, you do.
You've
got it on
the air.
I'll show you
during the commercial break. It's like light dawns on Marblehead when I show you.
Yeah.
Go on.
So, I don't do jokes, Murray. I'm not ready for a joke unless you prep me for it. So it ties into all of this, and what are the Patriots going to do on Sunday? San Diego is going to invite them to run. Will they accept the invitation? That's the question, which is hard to do for a team with a Hall of Fame quarterback, right? And I think it's sort of, on most days, dumb to do. Right? You got to throw to win in this league. So what are they going to do on Sunday? I got to the conversation yesterday where Murray throws out the most cliche stat in all of sports, which is when someone runs for 100 yards or someone has so many carries, the team is 12-1. Like, you hear that all the time, which is the most misleading stat in sports, and you know why, Maz, because typically when you're ahead, you run, and those stats get padded in the second half, and you end up with a 100-yard rusher or a 25-carry day.
Correct.
When it may not have been the running game that got you there, it's just the way you closed out a comfortable win.
Correct.
And that's the way it happens most of the time. And that's true. I mean, that's just a fact. So I said a more accurate analysis would be first-half carries. Or some way to quantify if the running game was a part of the initial game plan that got you ahead. Then I'll buy it and say the running game won you that game. Or 25 carries meant something, or 100 yards meant something.
Sure.
So I just said, that's what I said. Well, here come the nerds. Want to thank Andrew. Again, I won't say his last name in case he's a brain surgeon. And he was typing this out during brain surgery. I don't want to out the guy. But I want to thank Andrew for the email, even though he doesn't quite get it. Subject: Felger is wrong, all caps, about RB stat lines being inflated by garbage time. Here's the data. And then he starts out by saying, ... at least for the case of Sony Michel this season.
Okay,
so that's how he drew me in. And then he said, well, at least when it comes to Sony Michel. What was the stat you had yesterday, Murray? Do you remember the 25-carry stat?
6-1, I think, in 7 games.
Yes. 7-0 at home or 6-1 on the I forget what it was. They were 11-1 or something like that.
It was the whole crux of your argument.
Yeah, I know, and I don't have it right now, so
okay.
Go on.
So,
they win when they run. How about that?
Andrew says, I love how we've gotten under Murray's skin this week. It's tremendous.
That and a myriad other reasons, but go ahead.
He's having a tough week.
Andrew writes, Felger has been brushing aside Big Jim's stat regarding the win-loss record in games where Sony Michel gets more rushes, even though you've all forgotten what that stat is. Felger has flapped his big paleo diet eating gums that the association of a team's success in games where running backs have good numbers is because winning teams build a lead through the passing game and then milk the clock, which ends up padding the stats of the RBs. He says, for the case of Sony Michel, in bold, this is wrong. There have been 7 games this season where Michel has rushed for 15 plus times, and the Patriots, here it is, have a record of 6-1 in those games in which he's rushed over 15 times, 15 carries. They're 6-1, the lone loss being the Miami game. Andrew says, I analyzed game logs to determine the number of rushes that came before garbage time, which he defines as the point in which the Patriots took a lead of 10-plus points or in games decided by fewer than 10 points. The time in the game in which the Patriots took their final lead, blah, blah, blah. So he has a metric. He has a way of determining it. He says, on average, Michel had 84% of his carries before the Patriots got that 10-point lead or took the lead for good. The one outlier was the Week 4 blowout against Miami, where 2/3 of Michel's carries came in garbage time. It's a small sample, of course, for one running back, and it should be tougher sledding in the playoffs, but perhaps a good opportunity against the Chargers. The point is this, he says, this season the Patriots have had success in games where Michel has had an increased role in the game plan, and these rushes came when the game was still competitive, not when it was out of hand. Andrew in suck it, Felger. Andrew in Boston. Thank you, Andrew. Well, this is exactly what I was looking for. Right? Don't give me the 100-yard rusher, their record is X. That's dumb. Or when a guy carries so many times, you know, their record is what? Because if you're up even 10 points in the fourth quarter with one drive to go, you hand it off 3 times to get the other team to burn its time out, and the running back goes from 23 to 26 carries. Like, what does that mean? So you have to quantify that the running back was part of it, building the game plan and building the lead. He says, Pats are 6-1 when they use Sony Michel, and they use him early. Thoughts?
Well, I would say that...
Well, let me ask it a different way.
No, don't ask it a different way, because then you're steering the conversation.
No, take out the numbers. You've watched every game. We've all watched every game. Do you feel Sony Michel has been instrumental in winning a lot of games?
No.
Or the running game singularly, establishing the run has been instrumental in winning a lot of games?
I would say some games, yeah. Yeah, a lot, I don't know, but some, sure. But this gets back to my point. It does also relate to the opponent. If you're going up against a team that can't stop the run, then fine, hand it off to Sony Michel. No problem. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with doing it that way. I'm just telling you that, I don't think it's a Sony Michel thing. I think it's an offensive line thing, as it was with Jonas Gray in Indianapolis that year where he ran for 200-and-something yards. Okay, they knew they could truck the Colts because Colts were smaller in the defensive front, and Indy had no shot, and that was proof. So if you have that kind of advantage, by all means, why the hell would I say no? Of course. I'm just telling you, the way this is framed oftentimes is, you know, you got to run the ball. That's the way to win. I don't believe that. Sony Michel all of a sudden is the key to victory? I don't feel that at all.
Is Sony Michel the key to victory, Murray?
No, but the running game should be used this Sunday to help the passing game, which has been somewhat anemic, especially in the second half of the season. So take some pressure off Brady instead of the play action.
So,
and they've been good at it at home.
So that I agree with. I do think that they're going to try to run early, and I think that their passing game isn't what it has been in the past. And so if they can add an element in there of handing the ball off successfully so they can run play action and create more opportunities for the passing game, fine.
As usual, you guys are looking at it wrong.
So tell us, Mike,
well, thank you.
What's the right way to look at it?
I mean, you have the right answer. I think they should run this week, too. I do. And as I said yesterday.
You are such a dink.
As a game plan... As a game plan thing on a specific week because the opponent gives it to you? Hell yes, run the ball. Yes, of course. I'm not drafting a running back in the first round like some idiot to go do it, but I'm going to run the ball against a team that's giving me the run. So I agree with that, but that's why I do it, because the opponent gives it to me. This whole thing of establishing the run to set up the pass, that's from 1975, bro. Like, that is... You don't need to do that anymore. You know, you should really, pretty much every week you should come out throwing, unless the defense that you're facing is so anemic against the run or is giving it to you like this, playing 7 defensive backs, then you have to do it. Then I think you have to do it, and let's see if they can do it. But that whole thing of running to set up it is such a bad cliche, and it's just, I mean, you can do it. It happens. I've seen it. The Patriots do it from time to time. That sets up some play action. Like, my God, how many former offensive linemen Do you have to watch on ESPN or somewhere else talk about, you got to get going downhill and you got to run the ball that sets up the play action? Like, my six-year-old could give me that analysis. That analysis is so cliche. And you can do it. But in the meantime, what? Are you putting yourself in third and long? Or are you, you have a lot of two-yard gains and you're sitting there in second and eight? It's like, well, I'd rather just come out throwing. And you know what? The way the game is today, you can just come out throwing and run the ball. Have to pass it up the run the other way.
Yeah, but with Brady's play, shouldn't it be more balanced? I mean, I don't want to see him throw 50 times on Sunday
against
this defense.
Well, no. Because the San Diego defense is giving you the run the ball. But if the next opponent, if the Chiefs, and I don't know where they are, they got to be at the bottom of the league. If the Chiefs have the worst passing defense in the league, I want them throwing it 50 times.
Well, of course.
Yeah, of course.
In Kansas City, they better go there and throw it 50 times because they're going to have to put points on the board.
Yeah, I'm just telling you that I think San Diego is going to bait them to run, and they're going to try to run early.
And they should.
Because let's use that Jets game in 2010 as an example. Okay, the Jets gave them the run, and the Patriots wouldn't take it.
In the first half.
Right. Well, by then it was almost too late by the time they decided to take it. So this is my point, they were stubborn about it.
That score wasn't indicative of how that game played out. They got blown out. Ran it too late.
They just weren't – they were stubborn about it. No. It was almost like a Pittsburgh mentality. We're going to do what we do well instead of usually taking the Patriots approach or the Belichick approach was whatever you give us is what we'll do. And you're not going to be able to stop us because we can do everything. That team was a little different. That was a Danny Woodhead kind of team running out of the shotgun and everything else. It was a finesse running game. I feel like this offensive line run blocks pretty well. My concern, though, is Baltimore runs the ball, has a power running game. Baltimore has a power running game. And San Diego, the Chargers had a light front out there, and the Ravens couldn't run the ball. So that scares me.
Yeah, here's the other cliche that you hear all the time.
And you have to stick with the run. You've got to stick with it, said the big, dumb offensive lineman on TV.
Why? You got to keep putting yourself in second and nine all night? Well, that's a good way to start blowing possessions. You only get 12 to 13 possessions a game, 12, 13, 14, 11, somewhere in there. If you just start peeing them away because you've got to establish the line of scrimmage, there's some dumb cliche that you keep hearing. You got to feed that guy to get him going. Why do you have to feed someone? So I got to put up with a quarter and a half of second and nine and third and seven so I can feed my running back? Not just the dumbest thing you've ever heard? No. If it's not working, bail. Bail immediately instead of second and nine and third and seven. That's the surest way to lose. Yeah, just what, so I can get you your fantasy points? No.
All I'm telling you is I don't want this game in Sony Michel's hands. Okay, I'm sorry.
So hold on. So then what do you want? You said that they're going to run. They should run.
No, they're
going
to run early, I think, to try to show that they can run and get San Diego out of that defense, and then it'll create a better opportunity for the passing game. Because in the past, I would say, I don't care how they match up on you, you're going to be able to throw the ball. The Patriots can throw the ball on anybody. I thought they were that good.
They should be able to.
I don't think this team is that good anymore. Their offense is that good. I think they're going to need some other element in the offense to be able to do it. And also, just because I want them to run doesn't mean I want them giving the ball to Sony Michel the whole time. I'll take James White over Sony Michel if they want to hand it off. If they have the same number of carries, White and Michel, I'm totally good with that. I don't expect White to get 20 rushes in this game. But if to me, White should get 20 touches. He should get 20 touches a hell of a lot sooner than Michel should.
Folks, just your eyeballs. Most of you, like us, have watched every game. I just ask you. Okay, so the Murray's number and Andrew's number here, the emailer, 6-1. When Sony Michel has 15-plus carries, and they weren't in garbage time, that he helped establish those leads. Okay, so that's what that number tells you. Now I'm asking you just to use your eyeball and your gut without looking up a single number. Does it feel to you like Sony Michel in the running game set up a lot of these victories?
Yeah, when he was going, they won those games. Yeah.
And he was like
No, was he integral? No, but it felt like, by the time they get to the second half, it's like, okay, here he is close to 100 yards. He's going. The running game's working. Yes, okay. They've ended up winning those games. They won all of them. They lost one. The stupid Miami game.
Okay. So that's the way it feels to you, just not on paper, but just watching the games.
Yeah, especially at home.
Does it feel that way to you, Maz?
No, it doesn't. No. And the other thing is I would say, again, against who? Like when you go to New York and he's 21 for 133.
No, I don't count that.
Does that count? Who gives a rat's
ass? Kansas City. Kansas City's the one in the game that sticks out.
Absolutely. You could even argue Indy for crying out loud.
So right? Kansas City and Indy are on his list, and I actually went and broke down Kansas City and Indy. And let's take a closer look at that when we come back.
I would love to, actually.
Okay?
I'm
so
glad you did that.
I took a closer look at those two games.
Because I wasn't about to do that work.
Okay, but this is the question. You know, what's your faith in Sony Michel? How about that?
Low.
Spitefully high.
People of Boston, what's your what is your confidence level in Sony Michel if this game comes down to him? Your thoughts at 617-779. Well, you're filled up as usual. Patriots tickets, Ted Johnson coming up on the program as well. A Bruins giveaway this hour. Well, to you, though, right after this.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Something.
Come back and put it in my face.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now back to Felger and Mass.
They suck.
On Boston's home for sports.
What have your impressions been of the Patriots offense? The stats maybe aren't quite as good this year as they have been in the past.
Stats don't win games. You know, they figure out ways to win games, and that's all that really matters. I mean, they won the division, I think, for the ninth straight time. And back in this same situation, I don't know how many times, but they figure out a way to win games. And like I say, sometimes they'll go through the back, sometimes they'll go through the receivers, tight end, and the defense will step up and make timely stops, and you know, they're stingy in the red zone. So they just figure out a way to win games with what they have, and that's what's most important.
Anthony Lynn, Chargers coach, on the conference call this week. Your thoughts on this topic? I'll give you my thoughts on that Indy-Kansas City, a couple of the individual games, if you will. Here's Tom in the car, though. We'll get some calls mixed in immediately. Tom in the car, go ahead.
How you doing, guys? I was just calling. Matt just stated that Baltimore is a power running team, unlike the Patriots. It's actually the opposite. Baltimore is a zone blocking team. They're a finesse. That's why they have the read offense going, and that's why. When San Diego went to the smaller front, they were shooting the gaps. So therefore, they weren't able to get any traction running the ball because LA was shooting the gaps on them. Patriots are full team. They kick out. They're more of a power team with a traditional fullback when they run the ball with Sony Michel. It's like two completely different things. So that's why I think the running game and the Patriots will be successful in that area. And I also wouldn't be surprised if you see a lot of, you know, third and five, third and six, where you think there's going to be a lot of passes, but more draws because Bosa and Ingram like to get upfield, and they're going to try to get underneath them. So it's going to be frustrating to watch. Yeah.
Well, so what, now we're running on third and five?
No, I don't want to, but you know how you get frustrated with Josh McDaniels, you know, on five, third and six, and all of a sudden he's, you know, hand a ball off to like James White or Burkhead, you know, underneath because I think that's what San Diego is going to be doing is trying to get upfield. I don't want that because I think it's stupid, but it's more important. More of the point is they're going to be the Patriots are much more of a power running team and not as
okay. Tom, I'm just going to stop you.
Yeah.
There.
So listen, I'll take his word for it. I was talking more about the style of back. So you know, I'll give him the blocking differences.
I mean, I
don't doubt that they'll have Devlin in the game. I think that'll add an element. There's no question.
I think the Chargers went late because they wanted to account for Jackson. I mean, that's why they were in seven defensive backs. They wanted speed on the field so Jackson didn't tear him up in the running game. That's what it was really, more than anything. But they've been using that nickel and dime stuff all year. Yeah. So whether it's Lamar Jackson or someone else, and I would always do that against the Patriots. I would never, even in their diminished state, let, you know, especially Julian Edelman get off against a linebacker or Rob Gronkowski with a linebacker. Like, that's just stupid. And the team
suicide.
Yeah, the team that just stay in base against you. No. I put, you know, at least safeties on there for Gronkowski, but defensive back safeties to cover your linebackers and running backs and dare the Patriots to run. And if they do it and can do it, great. And then you adjust. But so that's how I would start every game against them.
There's just a lot. There's a lot that has to happen in order for you to be able to run the ball and stick to it. And one of them is play with a lead. So, like, if you know, it's great that, look, if the Patriots can run the ball in this game, great. I mean, I'm not going to cry about it. Whatever it takes is what you do. But if San Diego's chucking it all over you, and then all of a sudden you're down 14-3, you're going to keep running the ball? Sony Michel's going to bring you back?
Thank you. Brendan and Hopedale, is Sony Michel going to bring you back?
A couple of days ago, Maz said Sony Michel was not cut out for the playoffs. I'd just like to know what he possibly could be basing that take off. You do know that he's a rookie, right? He's never played in the playoffs before.
Yeah, I just don't think he's that rugged a runner, Brendan. I don't. Everyone keeps talking about his leg drive and his power, and yet every time he gets into a short yardage situation, he doesn't pick it up. So I'm just telling you, now next year, I don't know, maybe he hits the weight room and he's a stronger back next year. But to me, it feels like the postseason, because every down in the postseason is going to be a car accident. I don't think this guy can handle it yet.
How can you say that? He's never played the playoff game. A year ago, he was...
It's just a prediction.
How can you say that he's going to be good?
Yeah. I mean, what are you basing on?
I can't either. But last year, he was putting up 300 yards in the playoffs of college. So I guess neither of us can. But you're so stuck on your take from the beginning of the year that he's going to be bad.
So are you.
Why is that? Wait, what?
Well, I mean, you seem to think that he's ready for it. So what do you base it on?
The fact that he had a good year... He was good in big moments in college, so I mean, yeah, neither of us know.
He was good in big moments in college. I'm going to stop you there. So was Cyrus Jones.
So was Tim Tebow.
So, God dang it, that's your take? That's your opinion? That's what you're basing it on? I'm with Maz. At least Maz is basing off of NFL games. You're talking about what he did against Vandy? Give me a break.
And the other thing is, I'm not dug in on my take from the beginning of the year. I admitted a long time ago the guy doesn't suck. Okay, I said it a long time ago. He doesn't suck. He's perfectly fine. I wouldn't have used a first-round pick on him. Okay, that is really where I've dug in since then. The sucks and blows thing was an overreaction and an overstatement. I said it at the time, but nobody remembers that, but that's okay. Because we keep playing the drop, and I don't mind it because it's funny. But the fact is, I don't like the idea of giving this guy the ball 20, 25 times a game in the postseason. That guy? No way.
Okay, so these games that he was a big part of their victory. I'm talking about, you said Eagles. I'm sorry. You said Indy and KC.
Correct.
Indianapolis, he had 18 carries for 98 yards, 5.5 yard average. You do know he had one long touchdown run at the end that closed it out. That was a 34-yarder.
Okay. So I don't remember that.
So I do. That's where everyone went.
So the rest of the
time...
Of the time it was 17 for 64 yards?
Garbage. Yes, garbage time, I would say. I mean, it was a one-score game, but, the Pats were firmly in control. A hole was a mile wide, and he ran to the end zone. He hadn't reached the end zone yet before. So take out the 34 yards. It was 17 for what'd you just say?
64.
Okay. So I don't know what that average was.
It's under four.
In the first half, this is what we're concerned about, right? Is the first half establishing the lead. The Patriots went up 24-3.
Yep.
In the first half of that ball game, he had 11 carries for 44 yards. Good, right?
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah.
You know how many times they threw the ball? 27. So they threw it 27 times. They ran it 14. Sony Michel got 11 of them. Are you going to tell me that the running game set you up in that Indy game?
No, I would say the opposite. You passed to set up the run. I mean, you know what I mean. You didn't pass to set up the run. You passed first and ran second.
So I don't know, just... And you watched the game. It's like they lined up and pounded the ball and then used play action and established the line of scrimmage and fed the running back. Is that what they did? Or is he just a compliment to the passing game? But he got carries, so that fits, Murray's argument and the emailer's argument. Kansas City. He ran 24 times for 106 yards, 4.4-yard average, good, 2 touchdowns. That day, unlike the Indy day, the Pats were perfectly balanced. They had 38 rushes on the night, 37 dropbacks. I think it was 36 attempts with a sack, maybe 2 sacks, I can't remember, but 37 dropbacks.
And that game was like 23-9 at half or something.
So I don't include, I just don't give you the attempts. I actually include the sacks, too, because those are pass plays. In the first half... Again, totally balanced. And again, I think you had the halftime score right. First half, they're perfectly balanced. 17 rushes, 16 dropbacks. Michel in the first half of that ballgame, 11 carries, 60 yards, 5.5-yard average, 2 touchdowns. Statistically, I have to give you that one and say that Sony Michel was a big part of that first half against Kansas City, big part in establishing that big lead. And while the running game wasn't the driver, it was at least, It was balanced. It was perfectly balanced. It was 50-50 run pass. Michelle was a big part of that. He hit the end zone twice, averaged 5.5 yards a carry in the first half. And, okay, I think I'll give you that one. I do just want to say, except if you look at the Patriots' drive chart that day, their drives, they had 12 possessions. Want to know how they ended? This is how their 12 possessions ended. You ready?
Sure.
Downs. They failed on fourth down. And then their next 11 possessions. Field goal, touchdown, 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 halftime. Field goal, fumble, field goal, touchdown, field goal, field goal. What word did I not say? Punt. File that game under, I think they could have done whatever they wanted.
Because Kansas City had the second worst rush defense in the league based on yards per attempt. In fact, Kansas City has like the worst defense in the league, period.
Rush, pass, I think they could have done whatever they wanted in that game. Kansas City couldn't stop anything. Did the run set everything up that game, or did you just have it all over Kansas City? But at least, I'm not going to take it back. I will give you that. I will give you that one. How about Pittsburgh? Did they try and run in Pittsburgh?
I would say, I think he got a fair number of attempts in that game, actually, but he sucked in that game, if I remember right.
So his final line sucked, and he did suck. He got out the something. What was Samuel's first name? That scrub in Pittsburgh?
Oh, yeah, the running back. Yeah, I don't know.
Third string guy. Torches you for 142. Michelle had 59 yards on 13 carries. 4.5 yard average, not bad. And it's not like they really fed him in that game. But I don't know. So how'd you run the ball that game? How'd you defend the run that game? Poorly on both sides of the ball. But we can continue to discuss this because I find it interesting. Is that what they're going to do against the Chargers on Sunday? Coming back, we have Murray's update. And we take just a quick diversion. We haven't done it once this week. A quick Celtics and Red Sox minute from Maz right after this.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Maz.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Celtics have only scored this many points once under Brad Stevens, and that was in overtime. The Celtics drop 135 points and shoot 57% against the number 2 defensive team in the NBA. They sweep the homestand, and the Celtics are rising with a bullet right now in the Eastern Conference. The final score, Boston 135, Indiana 108.
Okay, we've been 100% wall-to-wall football this entire week. We're going to just give you a minute on Celtics and Red Sox, and then if you want to weigh in, by all means. Maz, your thoughts on last night's Celtics win. And Granny says they're rocketing up the Eastern Conference. They're still in the fifth spot, aren't they?
Yes, they are, yeah. But I think they're now tied with Indiana. And, you know, the gap is small between them and everyone, but I think Milwaukee. It's 2 or 3 games now.
Your thoughts on last night?
I thought it was their best game of the year. I like that Indiana team. I've told you I'm not sure they beat Indiana. You know, you asked me a couple of weeks ago, I'm not sure they beat Indiana in a 7-game series. I'm still not convinced of it either, by the way. But nonetheless, I like the Indiana team, so I want to be consistent about it. I look at it and I say, I thought on the offensive end in particular, the ball movement, the way the Celtics are passing the ball and cutting to the basket and all of it, is like borderline orgasmic. Danny Ainge was naked watching that game last night, covering himself in Crisco, for crying out loud, because that was his dream. That was his wet dream, that game last night, seeing how it all sort of came together. And not one guy had 20 points, right? I mean, nobody had 20, and they scored 135.
Yeah, but 7 players scored double digits, and they had 56 points in the paint. And so, to me, I'm with you. Best game of the year for them. It's as encouraging as it is annoying. So, like, where's a game like that been so far this year with all the talent that they have on this team? And I don't want to feel like – I don't want to make like I'm stealing Jones's take because he was brilliant on this last night. That was kind of annoying. And he's right to say that, because this team is too talented to be where they are in the standings right now, because what they did last night in terms of the ball movement, as good as they were in the paint – they have the talent to do that on a night-to-night basis almost. And you really don't see it until almost mid-January. It's kind of annoying. Encouraging, yes, but also annoying.
Okay, so look, encouraging, but it doesn't mean it's over. So, and this is where a couple things need to be pointed out, one of which I didn't know until you told me a second ago, because I missed it, which is that Indiana played the night before.
So my first question was, what time did they get in last night?
Okay, the bigger thing to me is that Miles Turner didn't play. Like, that's a big one. So, now, nonetheless, to do what they did to Indiana, still no small. To me, it's more about the way they played than the actual opponent, although they both factor in because they've been moving the ball well for a little while now. And the fact that Indiana came in here and they still were able to do it, to me, was eye-opening.
Anything else on the Seas?
Yes, here's what I'll tell you. They're going on the road now for three games. Tonight, they have back-to-back. They're in Miami. If they lose tonight, it erases last night team. I don't want to hear Miami's a tough game. Miami sucks. The Eastern Conference is five teams. It's really four and a half if you count Philly as the half. Beyond that, it's Indiana, the Celtics, and then, as we know, Toronto and Milwaukee. That's it. Everybody else is on a completely different level. I don't care. Miami's been bad at home anyway. So, and then the other two are who? Brooklyn's one of them, and Orlando, I think, is the other game. You should win all three of those. You should win all three, and I don't want to hear the back-to-back thing. So if you have all this depth, then go on the road after winning an easy game at home, and all your starters get to rest at the end of the game. Okay, so you should have plenty of legs tonight in Miami. I don't want to – a loss to me would completely detract from what you accomplished.
Give me a Red Sox takes.
Okay, just quickly, because I think it's worth keeping an eye on. Mookie Betts' arbitration numbers are due to be exchanged tomorrow. This has been an ongoing thing with Mookie Betts. The Red Sox have not been able to sign him to any contract, and I'm not expecting them to be able to sign him now. So two things. One, the numbers will get exchanged in the absence of a deal before then. I'm not holding my breath. I think they're going to exchange numbers tomorrow, and I'm eager to see what Mookie's number is. Because I'm willing to bet he's been projected at about $18.5, $19 million. I bet you he comes in over 20. I bet your Mookie Betts goes for a whopper in arbitration, and how the Red Sox handle it will be interesting to me. Okay, so again, because I think they're headed to another hearing. And Vinny Crouch, our simulcast producer up in Burlington at NBC Sports Boston, sent me this link, a link to this. Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports wrote a story. You know what the Red Sox did in their hearing with Mookie Betts last year?
I do because I read it, but tell the people.
Okay, so for fear of insulting or alienating Mookie, they tried not to argue negatively against him.
Last year.
This is last January. It might have crept into February. In any case, so what they did was they showed a video highlighting all of the strengths of Chris Bryant of the Chicago Cubs, as if to say, Chris Bryant's better than Mookie, and Mookie's looking for Chris Bryant money.
So, but they never brought up where Mookie was short. They just highlighted Chris Bryant.
Correct, which tells me two things. One, the more important of which, you know, the first thing is that the comps make all the difference in those arbitration cases.
And again, this was over $3 million.
Right.
$7.5 million versus $10.5 million.
Correct. The second thing is how much they are walking on eggshells around Mookie Betts in these things because they don't want to piss him off.
Why don't they just pay him the $10.5 million then?
They should have.
Why'd they take him to arbitration?
They should have just given him the $10.5 million over chump money. Really, it's nothing. Now, this time, when you get right down to it, the Red Sox are going to come in at, like, I don't know, call it 18. Mookie's going to come in at 21, 22. Why fight him over that? Just give it to him and be done with it. Stop playing the stupid game.
Build some goodwill. Start building a bridge to a real deal and start, you know. He hasn't agreed to a single thing you've ever offered.
No, which is why, again, you got to keep an eye on it with him. Most guys, I would say, they exchange arbitration numbers. Don't even waste your time. Okay, like, who cares? Jackie Bradley's going to exchange numbers, too. Whoop-de-doo. You know, if they want to trade Jackie Bradley, and there's now indication out there, Perry Keselowski.
They tried hard.
Yeah, apparently. Kenny Rosenthal said that they were more willing to move Bradley than anybody else, which I'm not surprised about. You know, they should offer him to the White Sox, because according to the stat nerds, you can get Jose Abreu for him.
Apparently.
So that's a steal, I guess, for the White Sox, so maybe they can offer him up there. But, I couldn't give a rat's ass about most arbitration cases. Mookie, you got to keep an eye on it because, to me, this thing's coming to a head soon.
Okay. You want to weigh in on the Celts last night? Mass's Red Sox thought. Here's your chance. Next segment, I'm going to give away a Bruins package, and we're going to take your calls. So we'll get right back to you right after these words.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
What can we say about Felger and Maz that you haven't already screamed in your car?
Sit on that one, bitch, and spin.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Philip, going back to last year with the relocation, and then through this year, you know, this will be your 11th road game, including London. And just how's that kind of steel this team for success in adversity?
I mean, I don't want to make more of it than it is, but I certainly do think that it's weathered us, contributed to our toughness and resilience, and all those adjectives I could give you. But from the move to, you know, new training camp sites to last year, I'm going back to last year now. You know, we spent the off season in San Diego, then we come here for training camp, and the facility's not quite done, and we're about to move back in for the, you know, into the new facility when the season started, and then we start off 0-4, we get on a run, finish just short last year, and we're disappointed. Because we felt like we were playing really good towards the end of last year, won 9 of our last 12. This year, you know, kind of a little more settled back in. But you mentioned we've had some tough road trips. We've gone across the country and had a home game in London and been all over. So it's a tough group. It's a tough team. You know, we're well aware. You know, the Patriots hadn't lost at home, and we haven't lost out of L.A. County. So something. One of those streaks are going to be broken on Sunday.
Philip Rivers the other day. As promised, right back to your phones. I have a Bruins giveaway coming up here in 1 second. Jim in Sarasota, Florida, has been waiting since we came on the air. Jim, go ahead. What do you got?
Hey, listen, the keys to that game for me, it's not Brady versus Rivers. It's Brady versus that offensive or the defensive line. If you watch that Baltimore game, you saw Boise and Karras wreaking havoc on Baltimore and that kid Jackson. So I see Shaq having a big game, hopefully a perfect game. As far as Gronk, I don't think Gronk's going to get double teamed. I think.
Okay, I'm just going to stop with those two takes. Who's he talking about on the Chargers defense?
I think he meant Bosa.
Yeah, but who's the second guy?
Karras?
I thought it was Ingram who tore him up.
Well, and those are the two guys, the two ends. Bosa and Ingram are the ones. I think, to me, I worry about Ingram more than I worry about Bosa.
Of course.
To me, Ingram looks like an absolute force. That guy, I thought he was good in the Kansas City game earlier this year. That, to me, was like the game of the year.
Should the Chargers double Gronk?
I would to start because the last thing...
Don't let him get going.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, the last thing you want to do is let Brady think he can go there all day. Like, if that happens, and all of a sudden the Patriots get on some kind of roll. So, you know, look, I think this is going to be a tight game. I mean, to me, it's a field goal game. I don't think it's going to get opened up either way.
Celtics win a couple of games. Guess who's climbing out of the mountain, comes out of the...
Luke.
The fog in Green Mountain, Vermont, in a cloud of, well...
Green what? Smoke.
Here comes Luke in Vermont. Hi, Luke.
Hi, guys. Before I get to Marcus Smart Maz, I got a question for you. The other day with the Bucks. What's the biggest difference between them this year and last year?
The coach.
Okay, so coaching matters. For 5 years, I've been telling you Brad Stevens is good, and you said it doesn't matter. So now it matters for the Bucks, but for the last 5 years, it couldn't matter for Boston?
It mattered. No, it mattered during the regular season. At the end of the day, when you get even talent out there, though, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so, and Luke, I'll amend my statement. It matters to a point. Okay, to a point.
Okay, good. All right. Now we've talked about Marcus Smart, how, like, when he shoots good, they lose, and when he shoots bad, they win. That's still going on, because since he got into the starting lineup, they've been the best offense in the NBA, and that doesn't make sense. You take out good offensive players like Gordon Hayward and put in Marcus Smart, and now they're the best offense in the league.
It's the Marcus Smart paradox, man.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly,
it really is. It's crazy. But, and I mean, we all know less mouths to feed and stuff, but you would not think you inject Marcus Smart into a starting lineup and you would become the best offense in the NBA.
Okay, maybe not the best offense, but I said early on he's got to be in the starting lineup. That it just, all those five stars, they don't fit, you know, and again, there's just not defined roles, or there's just something about it that you need a couple of dirt dogs in there, for lack of a better term, and Smart's obviously one of them. Makes a big difference.
I mean, because it's not all about half-court offense. And the other thing is, like, okay, Smart doesn't shoot well. And I, by the way, I'm not taking any of the cheese on this little three-point run he's had over three games. Like, all of a sudden, you know, yeah, Marcus has been working on his jumper. Please.
How many times have we heard that?
He gets hot for three or four games every year. It happens every year. And then he goes right back to throwing cinder blocks up there, which is going to happen again. But I will say, on the offensive end of the floor, he's got good game sense.
Like, oh yeah, no, he moves well and passes well and all
absolutely.
That.
He knows where to go with the ball. Like, I just don't want him shooting.
Phil in Malden has a thought for us. Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, if you caught the end of the game, the Bears game, that announcer said dilly dilly doink doink. But what about this scenario? The Colts beat Kansas City. They come in here. We beat the Colts. And we play the Saints in the Super Bowl. Thanks for taking the call.
Okay, babe. Tough road.
Yeah, but entirely feasible.
Of course it is.
I mean, I could totally see that happening that way. I don't like the Patriots' chances against New Orleans. I'll tell you right now, but let's worry about that later. So I don't like their chances if they have to go to Kansas City. Anywhere on the road or away from Foxborough, I have my doubts.
No matter what, with any of the teams left, there's no Lambs. There's no Tomato King.
Right. I mean, you know, the Colts at home, I'm going to pick against the Patriots, but, you know, they'll be a prohibitive favorite in that. So that's like a good matchup, I think. You know, just staying at home, period, is good. But the way the Colts are playing, that is no Lamb, right? That's no walkover. They're playing well on both sides of the ball. So this isn't, like I said this yesterday, usually the Patriots get at least 1 week where it's a total pushover. Usually it's the divisional round. Sometimes it's the AFC title game. This year, there's not going to be one. But all these teams can beat you. I want to tell you really quick about Patrice Bergeron and Toucher and Rich. Their Pucks for Paddles. It's been announced. Second annual ping pong tournament to benefit the Floating Hospital for Children at Tufts Medical Center and the Boston Bruins Foundation. It's Thursday, February 7th at Royale Boston. Bid to play doubles ping pong against your favorite Bruins player, Toucher and Rich, John Wallach, Bertrand, and others. VIP tickets are $200 and gives you access to an autograph session with the Bees. General admission tickets are just $50, and again, it all benefits a great cause. Floating Hospital for Children at Tufts Medical Center and the Bruins Foundation. For all the information and to buy tickets, go to 98.5 The Sports Hub. Also, caller 10 right now to the Pride Motor Group contest line, 617-931-0995. We'll score a Bruins prize pack, including a hat, T-shirt, and more, courtesy of the Boston Bruins and Star Market. Good luck on the prize. We've got two sets of Patriots tickets to give away. Two fat, juicy pairs of Patriots tickets for Sunday's playoff game. We'll give one set away next hour, and then I'll give you details on how you can win the second set, so stay tuned for that, and stay tuned for Ted Johnson. He joins us in studio right after Murray's 90-second update here, no commercials.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5
The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.